This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Jean Sibelius wrote his Fifth Symphony in 1915. Sibelius was a national hero by this point, and the Finnish government commissioned the work for the celebrations of his 50th birthday. World War I was raging across southern Europe, but it hadn't yet touched Finland. All that would change in the next 3 years, as the Russian Revolution set Finland free, but at the same time ripped it apart. Sibelius had once been the muse of the Finnish independence movement, but he was distressed by the violent anti-Russian and anti-Swedish fever that had taken hold of his country. His marriage was in trouble, he was deeply in debt, and two of his closest friends had recently died. And even though his music gave him an income, it didn't offer him any spiritual consolation. He kept himself afloat with commissions for occasional pieces that even he admitted weren't very good. The only things that gave him solace during these dark times were alcohol and the peace he found in the natural world around him. Sibelius first mentioned his Sixth Symphony in a letter to a friend. The Sixth Symphony is wild and passionate in character, gloomy with pastoral contrasts, probably in four movements with a finale, which will build to a gloomy, wild romp of the orchestra in which the main theme disappears. End quote. Well, it took him 5 years to finish the work, and in the end, it bears almost no resemblance to this description. In keeping with Sibelius' mood at the time, the symphony is much more a musical sanctuary than a wild romp, and it's full of what his biographer called his extraordinary ability to reaffirm a deep faith in humanity and life's vitality. Sibelius's Sixth isn't majestic and expansive like the Second or the Fifth, and it's not as experimental as the Seventh. It takes its structural inspiration from Mozart and Haydn, four movements with statements of purpose in the opening and finale, and a lighter third movement scherzo with a contrasting trio. But instead of the grand symphonic gestures and highly structured musical arguments of the classical era, it's built on sustained passages fashioned out of small cells of material that often call to mind the polyphony of Renaissance composers like Palestrina. Even the tempo markings are cool rather than resolute. Allegro molto moderato, allegretto moderato, poco vivace, very moderately fast, slightly moderately fast, and somewhat faster. The tonal center of the symphony plays with your ears as well. It's usually thought of as being in the melancholy key of D minor, but it's a D minor in what is called the Dorian mode or jazz minor mode. Think What Shall We Do with a Drunken Sailor, Billie Jean, or Scarborough Fair. This D minor shares the same notes of the scale as the triumphant key of C major, and the shifts of emphasis give the symphony an ambiguity that adds to that overall chill. Sibelius himself said later that the Sixth Symphony always reminds me of the scent of the first snow. The symphony doesn't so much start as it drifts into earshot. The violins and violas share swirling lines in that Dorian D minor scale, some upwards, some downwards, and tightly wound with few melodic leaps. Soon the strings swell, and the oboes and then the flutes enter with scales of their own. The winds take the lead, with lines that swirl down answered by upward arcs in the strings. The temperature begins to warm, but a strangely out-of-place note in the low bass changes the mood. And as this vaguely dissonant chord fades, the harp introduces a bubbling theme in the winds that settles the movement into a pastoral C major. In what would be the development section of a classical era symphony, the winds and strings trade passages that take the movement in some very adventurous harmonic directions. Eventually, it returns to the original D Dorian, but leaning towards the related key of F major, and the flute brings back its melody from the opening. A joyous, almost climax leads to a dark and indecisive passage, that leads to a powerful and seemingly final cadence in that bright key of C major. But it's not the end. After a pause, that D Dorian quietly reasserts itself. And the movement closes in hushed tranquility. In the second position, in place of the usual slow movement, the six has a moderately fast set of variations. Except that there is no real theme to anchor the variations. Instead, there are five related sections. The first three are increasingly elaborate versions of the same materials, including the upward swirling scales of the first movement. A slow descending scale passage, answered by a jumpy, almost dance-like melody. And faster scales going up. These first three sections don't really follow each other so much as they accumulate, each section building on the previous one, and the whole becoming steadily denser and more rhythmically complex. The fourth section, though, provides a contrast in atmosphere, with soft, shimmering notes played mostly in the strings, with woodwinds interjecting, like a musical snow flurry. The fifth section briefly brings back the opening materials, and ends abruptly on a matter-of-fact minor chord. The third movement is the most traditional in structure. It's clearly modeled on the late classical era scherzo, even down to a contrasting trio section. It's whirring and energetic, and probably the most immediately accessible movement in the symphony. But the contrasting trio section brings back that enigmatic chill with an almost minimalist essay in static rhythm and lazy harmonic changes. The finale is marked allegro molto, and we finally get some semblance of the majestic Sibelius of the Second and Fifth Symphonies. This movement is in three parts as well, starting with a noble theme that is stated, answered, and passed about from strings to winds in a call and response until it reaches a clear cadence and is immediately followed by the second part. Brighter, faster, more energetic, and more dance-like. Part 3 brings back the materials of the first part, but now stated more freely and elaborately. The music seems to be leading to a brilliant and festive conclusion, but instead it fades out into an extended coda. Which could be thought of as applying to the entire symphony and not just to the finale. Those swirling Dorian mode scales of the opening movement return. And after resolving into the simplest of patterns, the violins end the work on a D natural that fades away almost to nothing. Many commentators have found Sibelius's Sixth Symphony difficult to grasp, and it has never been one of his most popular works. Sibelius himself didn't help. When he was asked about it, he tended to contradict himself or even deliberately mislead his questioners by suggesting that it's actually a poem, or implying that under that smell of the first snowfall is an undercurrent of rage and passion. But Sibelius knew that in the end, it wouldn't matter how he tried to describe it. The final form of one's work, he said, is indeed dependent on powers that are stronger than oneself. Later on, one can substantiate this or that, but on the whole, one is merely a tool. This wonderful logic, let us call it God, that governs a work of art is the forcing power, end quote. Sibelius left it up to us to discover that power in his Symphony No. 6. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.